What I know is that the Minister of Communication is in Durban, KZN. That's the apology we have. Honorable Tsedi will leave us soon for a 10 o'clock meeting. And if Honorable Kungbele comes in, he will leave us at 5 to 10 to attend the same meeting. Remember, it's a Wednesday today, ne? So they sit in Enterprise, and Enterprise is Wednesday, so we'll have to excuse them at that point. I'm not sure where Honorable Van Damme is. We don't have an apology. Are you whispering to me or are you talking to the meeting?
Sorry, Jay. I would have assumed that she would have put in an apology, but she just sent me a note to say that she won't be able to make it. So I cannot really, but I can just forward that to you.
I would suggest that we could proceed now that the correct word is not what we must be having here. There is a meeting at 1 o'clock.
I'm not whispering, I'm talking to the meeting. We must be out of this place at 12:30. This place will be used by chairpersons of portfolio committees. At 1 o'clock there will be that meeting. So we'll have to try by all means to cut other things out. We're very familiar with the mission and whatever, mandate and all those things. We're very familiar. We just need to go straight to the point. Welcome, Honorable Kungubele. Welcome, sir. Just that if the meeting was not on, we'll stand up. He's the chief. So when the chief comes in, the subjects must stand up. Even if I am in East London and he's in Joburg, when talking to him, I stand up. Talking to him on the phone, I'm in East London, he's in Joburg, I must stand up and salute. So, as I said, they will leave us just 5 minutes before 10. Those are the apologies, members. I see an apology that is not signed. Why don't we sign this thing? Just sign this thing so that it's... The apology is from the Deputy Minister of Communication. Oh, she has a doctor's appointment. And PLOs must learn to send apologies so that we don't call you before you send the apology. So do your work so that you don't put ministers and deputy ministers in trouble. So we'll have to, in welcoming you, we'll have to welcome you. I don't know who'll start, Ms. Delo. I always forget them. I remember all the time Tennessee. So members will have to do that. Documents were circulated yesterday. I can say that members had enough of the days of interviews. This committee was never like this. So you'll have to go straight to the point. I don't want to narrate a story of one of the security branch. It's not a wonderful story. He says, go straight to the point, but he was putting it in a very rude manner. Security branch in Cambridge is London. I'm told there is a page 11, there's a new page amending what is there. Is it GCIS? Or that? Let's deal with the communications first.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. I think the presentation being reflected is GCIS. So if we can quickly show the DOC.
Is your presentation ready, Mr.? Just that is not... anyway, we can start with GCIS, no problem. No problem, we can start with GCIS. Ongzwile, memutinti. Wherever, ngibonus computer. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks to Tennessee. I was hoping that she's going to start first, and I'll take cue from her. But thank you very much, Chair. It's always a pleasure for us to come here because we always get some wise advice. I am with a team from GCIS, the three DDGs. Maybe in the interest of saving time, we've got Mr. Smakane, who's the DDG of Corporate Services. We've got the acting DDG also at the back, Tasneem Karim for content, and we've got the DDG of acting DDG for stakeholder engagement, Michael Karen, and then I also have our strategic planning Chief Director, Zugi Swapoye, and that's myself, I'm Pumla Williams, I'm the acting DDG of GCIS. Oh, sorry, I forgot the acting CFO, Mr. Henny Becker. Chair, in the interest of saving time, you correct, we are not going to go through all the slides, but just as an introductory part, I would just indicate that the quarterly performance report that we will be presenting today is unaudited. It still has to be audited and verified by our internal audit, but we have submitted it on time. It has been submitted to the executive authority and the Department of Planning and Evaluation and Treasury as it is required in the PFMA. So we will be taking you through some of the key highlights. I will skip the next slide was talking about the communication environment, just passed the legislative mandate. We will pass that. We will also pass the mandate and vision and mission. We will also pass all that. And I think just on the environment chair, without going through everything, I would like to highlight that the first quarter in the implementation of some of our deliverables did happen in an environment that was very, very difficult in the first quarter. And I think what we want to highlight is that, you know, when you do the communication program, you also have to take into account what is taking place in an environment. And you'll recall during that time, that's the time when the issues of gender-based violence really came to the fore, the killings of Garabo Mukwena, and a number of other things. There were issues of SASA. So all those, they somehow meant that we have to balance dealing with what is in the environment, but equally implement what we had sought to implement. And if you just go through, what I would just want to highlight, just as we take you through, is also to indicate that for the period under review, we had 41 targets, and we're happy to report to the members that 37 of them, we did successfully implement them. We will only focus on the variances, the four targets that we failed to meet. But before we go into that, Chairperson, we thought that maybe we'll quickly take you through what you advised us in the last and what progress we have made. For that process, I think we have requested Zugiswa to just quickly take you through, and after Zugiswa, we then go to the four variances that we were not able to achieve and what were the reason and what remedial measures we are going to put in place. So without wasting time, I'd request to Zugiswa to take you through some of the advices and recommendations you made in the last presentation and what we've done with them. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm just going to quickly take you through some of the observations and concerns and issues that you raised, as the acting DG is saying. And the first one was the filling of the vacant positions. We are happy to report, honorable members, that of the 14 vacant SMS positions, all of them were advertised, and we shortlisted five, and three have been interviewed, and the six remaining, the process to shortlist them is underway. On the misalignment between the indicators and the targets for Program 1, which we accept, we have reinstated the old indicators which we had, and the reason we had that bit of a misalignment, honorable members, was we're trying to deal with a comment that we'd received from one of the oversight bodies. We have reinstated them and submitted them through to the DPME and through the first draft of the 2018-2021 APP. On the distribution of Vukuzenzele, honorable members, we in fact, there's a slide that you must have received as a standalone this morning. It just makes a correction on one of the columns, and I must apologize for that. I'm not sure if it's telling of my relationship with mathematics, honorable members, but I'll take you through that. But we are indicating that we, during the quarter, we produced and distributed six editions of Vukuzenzele, equaling 5.1 million copies, and we do the distribution through door-to-door, which is distribution to homes, and through to the, and we call that bulk distribution to the provincial offices and district offices, and we also report that we produce the Vukuzenzele in all official languages. So the slide that I'm talking about, the next slide that is now a single flyer this morning, honorable members, was meant to give you an example of how distribution of Vukuzenzele takes place. This is an example of just one edition of Vukuzenzele, which is 850 copies, because on a month we produce it and distribute it twice a month. So it's 850 copies per edition times two, which is about 1.7 million copies. And in a year, we produce that 12 times, and we produce about 20.4 million copies of Vukuzenzele in a year. And if we go to the languages, all of them, you see they are there. And the correction is just on the distribution per province, where we're saying that to the Eastern Cape, just for the one edition of September, we distributed 165,469 copies. I'm not going to go through that, just to save time. Let me just see. I apologize, members. The laptop is a little bit slow. And still continuing on the presentation, one of the issues was raised was the coherence of the government message on gender-based violence. And we are reporting that we have, as GCIS, developed and costed a communication strategy on gender-based violence, and submitted a request for funding through the MTF process to the National Treasury. The effects of sharing the office space between GCIS and the DOC, we have, again, as both departments, submitted a request for additional funding on the budget shortages for both departments on the building matter. Other challenges facing the department besides the budget, honorable members, we highlighted that there was a lack of coherence due to lack of authority by the GCIS to coordinate the entire government communication system effectively. And we are happy today to report that GCIS has now finalized a communications policy in which the minister has made, or political principals have made, tremendous inputs on them, and those documents will be ready for submission to cabinet for approval, honourable members. The last one from me is where the honourable members were saying that we should share the government statements and opinion pieces with them, and we are happy to report that we've got the government statements on the current GCI, currently on government websites, and the honourable members are free to access that, so that it's quicker for them to access the information. I think that is the end of my part on the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to give it to Michael now, but just before I give to Michael, I just want to emphasize, Chairperson, the issue of gender-based violence. I think for us, it's such an important campaign that much as we don't have the budget for it, but what we are currently doing, we're having a lot of dialogues with communities through our provincial offices, because we believe that there has to be a lot of this engagement. There's a lot of work that we're doing also with the Department of Justice to engage communities through our community media platform, which is the radio. We link up in our program on every Thursday for an hour to engage communities, and I think we're finding a lot of stuff that is coming out. But I think the request, the funding that we request, is that we believe that we can amplify this message and also amplify this dialogue. And National Treasury did see the need for us to make a bid for the funding that is available through the EU pool. So at this point, Chairperson, I will hand over to Mr. Michael Curran, who is going to talk about the two variances in the stakeholder engagement branch. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, honourable members, thank you. Just to say, Chair, the two at the bottom there I'll speak to. Firstly, we did have a very rich content quarter. It's been very busy. But taking cue from what the DG was saying, honourable Chair, we had to make a deviation from our Chisong marketing work. We only have a certain number of field workers, and we really rose to the occasion of intensifying activities in the gender-based violence. So community outreaches, door-to-door campaigns, etc., which meant that regrettably we couldn't field all the 21 targeted Tsong outreach activities in that quarter. I am not too concerned, if I may say, Honourable Chair, members, because in September we have the fourth annual week of the Tsong program, which is really a highlight for the year. So I really anticipate, because it's very active at the centres in September, we should catch up on the year-to-date around that indicator. And then the liaison visits, where our field workers go out to communities to engage, we fell below target of with 24, principally because we are, as you'll see later, Chairperson, quite in a tight fiscal space. So we've had to ask the teams to maybe once or twice in a month spend a day at the office doing some catch-up work, doing some online work to try and contain some of the budget that they use for the field work. So I also believe, Chairperson, that on the year to date, we will catch up by the end of this financial year. Thanks.
Thanks, Justine.
Thank you, and morning, honourable members. The two targets at the top of the slide are relating to video services and radio products that we didn't meet in this quarter. Relate mainly to services that are requested from other departments, primarily the presidency, the president and the deputy president, but also from other departments who either require events to be video recorded, and in some instances short clips to be made on particular government programs that are then uploaded to YouTube on their behalf. And radio products, these refer to the phone-in programs that we do with community radio stations, where we link up to 65 community radio stations at once, and departments come and pay for the satellite broadcasts. We pay the community radio stations for taking that program live. And then the targets are set based on past experience, So we based those targets. We of course tried to make them a little bit more than they were the previous year, but they're ultimately based on what we've experienced in the previous years. So the reason why we haven't made the target this quarter is because we've received fewer requests than we normally do from other departments, mainly due to budget cuts. However, we foresee that we'll be able to catch up with this target by the end of the year because as we also increase our activity on the campaigns that GCIS has also undertaken to engage in, then we will also be doing more video and radio products for those campaigns. So we don't see foresee a problem by the end of the year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's all from us. So, finance. I'm sorry, finances.
Good morning, honorable members and chairperson. I must say that finance, yeah, is also very important. Yeah. Before that, let me welcome the member who just joined us. I was checking if she has documents. Yes, she has. Thank you very much for joining us, member. You will follow what we're dealing with. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson and members, I will take you through the expenditure trend of the first quarter as it was presented also to National Treasury in July. That is for the period 1 April until the 30th of June. With relation to the overall expenditure trend, the department was on 21% of the total budget of 404.7 million, of which Program 1 spent 23% of its budget, Program 2 19% and Program 3 22%. Committee members, I will take you through the individual programs with the other slides. On the next slide, with regard to economic classification, compensation of employees was on 23%, which is about 2% below the time benchmark of 25%, and that is mainly due to the vacancies that we are currently in process of filling. Goods and services was on 19%, mainly due to outstanding invoices from our service providers. I will also give you some more detail with the other slides. On transfers and subsidies, we had 100% spending there on the current budget allocation, and that is mainly due to leave gratification and leave discounting of leave credits that were paid to employees on retirement and resignation. On capital assets, we have spent 39%. Our capital assets budget is above benchmark, mainly due to the fact that in the first quarter, when we start with the first quarter, we actually urge all our sections to spend on capital assets because often of the timing it takes for delivery to take place, so in order to make sure that we do spend all our capital budget. We also budget from goods and services on capital assets, which we then, through environment process, then increase the capital budget where appropriate. If we move to the slides of Program 1 and 2 and 3, on Program 1, the personnel spending is on 23%, mainly, again, as I indicated earlier, on the vacancies that we are busy filling. On the operational spending trend, it's also 23%. Highlights there, Chairperson, perhaps just to outline, is on management, there's a spending trend of 52%, no reason for concern. It is mainly due to S&T traveling, but that will be funded through savings that we will generate in other areas in order to fund our budget constraints. The office of the CFO is on 17%, and that is also that we will fund the management, but it's also on S&T that we some have to reprioritize in order to create that funding in other areas to fund that. With regard to IT, information management and technology, we are on 13% there, and that is mainly due to outstanding invoices from our service providers. Colleagues, members, then I actually want to refer you to internal audit, which is on 39%, and that is mainly due to our audit fees that we have paid in respect of the 16-17 financial year audit that was concluded. On human resource management and development, on 11%, mainly due to our adverts that we have done, of which we still need to receive the invoices, and then of course there is our bursaries also, the bursaries budget also included there. With regard to the other areas, is that we are actually more or less on benchmark, although on office accommodation, there is a slight overspending on the benchmark percentage already, but we will also fund that through savings in other areas. On program two, overall the program is on 19%, of which personnel is on 23%, and then operational on 14%. In this area, members will note that it is mainly due to outstanding invoices from service providers, as well as in the fact that most of these functions will also be delivered from the second quarter of the financial year. And what's perhaps we can also note here is that there are outstanding invoices, especially with regard to the distribution and publishing of Booker's and Zelle. There's also outstanding invoices with regard to research, but with regard to our tracker research, that will also be actually increased from the second quarter of the financial year. In program three, this is mainly our program of the provincial offices, mainly. They travel a lot. The program is currently on 22%, personnel on 23%, and operational on 18%. With regard to the underspending there, Chairperson, there's also no reason for concern. It is just that it's also outstanding invoices and then also traveling that will take place during the remaining part of the financial year, which is the three quarters beyond this specific report. Chairperson, then on the last slide, we just need to indicate some funding pressures. We have submitted a request to National Treasury for funding of our communication projects that we intend to do. And those projects specifically with the aim with regard to job creation, fighting crime, fighting corruption, and then gender-based violence. It is quite a bit of funds that we require. Unfortunately, in our current budget, we do have that funding pressures. So in the adjustments budget, we requested an amount as well as through the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework budget submission. On our contractual obligations, our funding pressures specifically is with regard to office accommodation and municipal services, our maintenance, facilities management, as well as with our external audit fees. And that is all based on estimates that we did receive from the service providers in that regard. Our IT infrastructure is currently experiencing a funding pressure of around the 2 million mark. Chairperson and members, that is specifically due to our web service that is aging and it need to be replaced at some point. Thank you very much.
Chair, just as I conclude, I just wanted to emphasize the fact that, you know, due to the budget constraint, I think we've done a lot with face-to-face contact with communities. I think we find that effective but also cost-effective for us. Through our provincial offices, we do a lot of activation in taxes, and we also partner a lot with NGO communities to deal with issues that affect the communities directly. I think we find that quite impactful because we are able to focus on issues that communities want to engage with. So I thought we should emphasize that. And then lastly, Chairperson, I also want to emphasize the the community radio stations. I think with our platforms recently, I think we were informed, we've always had the community radio station reaching about plus minus 8 million people. But I think recently our platform reached up to 13 million people at a go. So a one-hour program in our platforms, and I think that's what we are busy marketing with even departments, that you derive more impact if you come and use our platform, because we reach more people than just going to one radio station, and you reach across the country. So we found that quite impactful. And lastly, Chairperson, we still pride ourselves with reaching the 30 days payment of invoices as one of the requirements that is being monitored. We still pay companies. I think our success rate is over 90% success rate, in 99% in paying invoices as we receive them. Thank you.
It's almost 100%. Thank you very much, Mama Williams, Acting DG. Members, I think let's attend to GCIS first, and then after that we'll go to DOC. Any issues that members want to raise? Honorable Kalako and Honorable Tolash.
Thank you, Chair. Let's start with the easiest, the GCIS. I think this question I will pose also to the department on this problem of accommodation, because you said the department is still with you. I wanted to check if the department is paying any rental to you on the usage of your accommodation. They are laughing. I'm sure they are not paying. So I wanted just to check that. And then I didn't get on transfers and subsidies. Is it, were you saying it's only for employees, pensions, or can you clarify that a bit so that one can understand exactly? You say you have helped in the office accommodation and municipal services overspending, but you say it's going to be that recovered. Can you explain how, so that we can hold you to that at the end of the financial year if it doesn't happen? And then on the what is your staff complement in totality? You have provincial offices. What is your staff complement in provincial, and what is your also there your costs around rental services which are provided in provinces? And then you were saying that is Vuk'uzenzele which is able to reach, is reaching 13 million people.
Radio.
Oh, it's radio. Oh, okay. So this is what your argument was, that the department and these imbizos and meetings, if they use it, they get more, you know, reach. So, Chair, I wanted just to check those things. I know the question of vacancies, the acting, is a question, is issues which you are dealing with the minister. Maybe the minister, when he's available, because she has committed to come and take us through on that, what is happening. Chair, thank you very much.
Okay. I think those questions are noted. Can I take Honorable Dolash?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, CIS and the department. Chair, first let me really say to the CIS in particular, I'm quite impressed with the activism that is being demonstrated in the within the CIS. There's a lot of activism that I can pick up, of which for some of us, that's what we are here for. I'm quite impressed with that activism. But I also want to congratulate them on how they've profiled the life and legacy of our Tambo. Really, it is, I don't know how else you could have done it. It's really the most profile since the dawn of democracy, I can say. Chairperson, I'm happy with the issue of the filling of posts. There's a lot of progress that we must register there. I'm also excited with the policy, the communication policy, because that for me is the beginning of the real things to happen. Because where I'm sitting, Chairperson, I see that policy being the anchor of the communications of the entire government, the three-tier government. Means, for me, when that policy is in place, we'll be able to influence, as you are doing, the state of the nation addressed by the president. With your provincial officers, you'll be able to coordinate the provincial state of the provinces, as well as retire the district and the municipalities. Because this is one government, and we must be able to know what is going on, and that must be informed with the state of the nation address. And you can, with the activism that I'm picking up, you can influence even the very last tier of government, that kind of their state or their arrangement that they are making, through your own profilement that you can do, and you have demonstrated that you are capable to do it. Chairperson, congratulate you with the your engagement with Department of Public of Department of Justice, where you are able to profile and talk directly with the issues of gender-based violence. It's a scourge, we all agree, this Pumla, and Komunyaka, Savumbelana from AIDS, HIV, we have another scourge that is now gender-based violence. And the government, our government, must be able to articulate and speak about it and be able to bring everybody who does have a knowledge about it and how our people can be assisted insofar as that is concerned. I'm really happy because there are very easy laws that you can think for you sitting behind this desk are very easy. But for an ordinary woman, it's very difficult. She doesn't know that she has got rights. She doesn't know that she can be covered by the law. And your interaction with them, like you are doing, will assist to an extent, Honorable Chairperson. I'm really happy. I'm also happy with the fact that you are beginning to use, as we have always been doing, the radio stations. Our people know exactly which program is going to take place and when. They tell you, if you come to Emakaya, they tell you, no, no. At the particular time, they will listen to this because they get a lot of information. A very good strategy of communication, Chairperson. I don't want to say anything more, but I'm saying I'm noting a lot of activism that can achieve a lot. Because all other things, all other departments can be influenced by what you are doing. And no one would not want to be profiled with the CIS that is so active. No one would want to be left behind because you are so active, you are so good in doing everything. And at the end, everybody will be able to know how many houses are built where, how many clinics are built where. Just as easy as that. Remember, Chairperson, 2019 we are going for the election. As political party, we have our own interests, but as government, you must be able to tell the story. What is this that you have been able to do? And for me, that's GCIS. GCIS must be able to tell us, Engoza, kufakwa manzi kangakanani, electricity kangakanani. I can't go to Department of Water Affairs. Yes, they have their information, but the people who must communicate that eloquently and consistently should be GCIS. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I'm quite happy. This is all out of the excitement of the kind of good work that is being done, and I see a lot of good things coming your way and our way at the end, and to our government to say, here we are, as per our commitment, we are able to do exactly what we said we are going to do to our people. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairman.
Before Honorable Fandik, can we have responses? Because I have some one or two questions myself.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for the questions. I think Henny will deal with the finances, but just to take some of the few, and I think my colleagues can add, on the community radio, Chairperson, what really pleases us with community radio, we've been able to keep them sustainable. They have gained a huge listenership. As I'm saying that when we started this journey, we had a listenership of about 8 million. In fact, it was less. And the recent stats that we receive is that it's almost 13 million. We're going on a drive to convince departments that during these just budget constraints, community radios are an option. You reach more people. You get to talk to them for an hour for a mere 6,000 rand per station. So I think we try to promote that because it has always been our mandate, even if you recall through MDDA, is to make sure that these community radios get attraction. And I think this is what pleased us with the feedback that we received. The life and times of OR, Chairperson, I think we would like to also give credit to the SABC. I think we went and we knocked and we said they have a responsibility. And I think they have really embraced the project of celebrating OR. I mean, I generally listen to Mshobo Wenene on Saturdays. They even have a talk show on people calling Ezlalini talking about OR. And I think it was pleasing. One of the mornings I was driving and there was an old lady who was on the phone talking about how she grew up with OR, and I think it is the SABC, and I think would like to also use this opportunity to share the compliment with the SABC. In terms of the communication spreading beyond GCIS only, Chairperson, what we should have also mentioned is that we are investing a lot of our time training counselors, the ward councillors. As we speak now, there are some of our colleagues who are in the provinces and in districts training councillors because we believe some of the problems we have at district level is just poor communication from a ward councillor. So we are giving them some ammunition that the problem doesn't go away by not meeting with your community. So we are doing a lot of work currently training councillors on how to engage with their constituency, and it's a work in progress, and hopefully maybe when we come to present next time we'll even give you figures how many of the ward councillors we have trained, but we are currently busy with that project. Thanks, and I think Henny can talk to that, and Kitu can talk to the personnel.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Chairperson and members. Thanks for the questions. With regard to the first one, if basically is DOC paying GCIS? Colleagues, we need to remember, perhaps just to note that there's an MOU in place between the two departments where we provide services to DOC, but on the other hand, there's also one or two that DOC is rendering to a GCIS. So currently the answer is no. DOC is not paying GCIS for accommodation. With regard to the clarification on transfers and subsidies, according to prescripts, that when a person resigns or retires, that the leave credits at that time of resignation or retirement, that those leave credits are paid. When that is paid, then the expenditure incurred as transfers and subsidies. Now, that is also then funded. Section 5 of the Appropriation Act provides then us an opportunity to approach National Treasury in order to move funds from compensation of employees to transfers and subsidies. So what is currently in the report, the 100% spending, is that what incurred at 30 June and then the budget that we actually moved from compensation of employees in order to fund those payments that were done. and that is all in accordance with Section 5 of the Appropriation Act. With regard to office accommodation and municipal services, yes, we are experiencing funding pressure there. Perhaps just to note that we are realizing during the year we are on a cost-saving measures exercise in order to fund that, and that cost-saving measures specifically involves in S&T traveling. When we have workshops, etc., we have it in-house in our office building, etc. We do not incur unnecessary cost in order to provide for our funding pressures. Yeah, and that's it. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. The staff complement of GCIS in total is 441, and we've got 30 contract workers, which makes it 471. And of this 471, 125 are at our 9 provincial offices. That's our staff complement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is on the Vukuzenzele. You raised, or you said that you are also doing door-to-doors to distribute the Vukuzenzele. What I want to know is in what provinces do you do that, and how many people are doing the distribution, and what's this budget for? Also, what is the cost effect of that on the budget? I also want to know, if you have to pay people to distribute it door to door, what does it eventually cost to supply a paper, the printing cost, and then also to deliver? And is it only certain provinces, and how many copies does such a person distribute, or per person? I hope I put that clear. Then the second issue that also for me is also of concern, you put a great deal of emphasis on gender-based violence, and you do also address it through programs. I want to know, I'm not quite clear on it on the matter. I see that you are requesting funding for it. Where do you intend to spread your message? Is it only in rural areas? And then I also agree with you. I want to say, with all the media reports recently, Manaka, Grace Mugabe, Robert McBride, the fact of the matter is that government really is not reflecting the seriousness of this issue. We also have the Minister of Women that recently actually said that gender violence is not a crisis. So how does this impact on your efforts? And then I also want to ask you if you are not considering to drive such an issue or such a program in Parliament. It might be needed also with our MPs. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. You introduced someone as a stakeholder liaison. Maybe, sir, you will tell us more about what you do in the country, because for me that's quite important. The stakeholders are the people who are supposed to be, in a big way, assisting government communications. Maybe you'll have to talk more on that one. MPs have offices in almost every corner of the country, constituency offices. And partnering with them, I accept, it's a good thing to do. Maybe on purposes of distributing material, but these members, they live in communities, or they work in communities
where there are community radios, as you were saying. GCIS person in the province where I come from, in the area where my constituency is. My constituency is in Fort Beaufort, I mean Adelaide, Bedford. She linked me up with the community radio once when we were in Joburg, in Gauteng for Radio Forte, when we're in Gauteng oversight, we started in GCIS. For me, it was a beautiful conversation with people because it was phony. I'm not sure how many members have experienced that, because you begin to talk to the communities relaxed because there is time, not this 5 minutes thing or 3 minutes thing. And I think if you were saying 6,000, yes, okay. So you find time to talk to communities, reach out and all of that. I think it's something because you communicate in the main government work and you talk directly to citizens. And I think on that one we just need to step up a bit. I'm interested more on that further explanation of the stakeholders. In provinces, there are GCIS offices. Went to one where during KZN the thing was squashed in a small boardroom there. I know that one at least. I don't know if where is one in Mpumalanga, for instance. The provincial office of GCIS. I'm not sure in the Eastern Cape where the office is, where I come from. I've never been, but I've been to KZN office. If we have these offices, it would be wonderful for linking up the stakeholders with those offices, because I think they are people who can do work more than anybody else who is not in the province. When we come to DOC, in the budget of DOC, we are paying nothing to GCIS. Is there any item for rentals in your budget? Because it's important that's DOC. It's important to know that whether it's budgeted for, but it's not used because you are staying at home. So when we come to DOC, we'll have to deal with that. That was the Honorable Kalako's question, but I'm just adding on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, ma'am. Over to you.
Thanks for Chaplin. Chaplin, I've got an interest on this gained huge listenership on the local community radios. So I guess if I've heard the acting DG very well, he was talking about the huge listenership because they saw it on their graph. I've got this question of these national radio stations, the provincial one, like the Ligwalagwala FM, that why are your radio presenters of those national radio stations keep on resigning and joining these local community radio stations? Do you sometimes have an exit interview so that you can
understand why are they keep on resigning in numbers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions so that we round up with Josias? Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much for the questions. I think the questions from Honorable Van Dijk on Vukuzenzele, I think my colleague Tasnim will respond to it, and Michael will respond to the stakeholder engagement. But the ones that I wanted to just zoom in on the campaigns, firstly, the gender-based violence is not a rural issue. It's a national issue. We try and approach it in that way. That is why, Honourable Member, that we are pains in trying to engage with NGOs, because we believe that they can be a useful stakeholder for us. We're engaging with them, but also additionally, we're trying to engage the government departments as a whole so that we tackle the issue in a coherent manner, even at a national and provincial level. That's why we were saying that, for instance, the Department of Justice, they have the funding, and they are doing, and they are using very effectively community radio stations. They've got a one-hour program where they talk to communities, and it's amazing the feedback that they get from communities who call, who don't know what to do, and they actually offer some services and some advice, and they've also even offered us a slot so that we begin to talk about these things. So it is a drive that we intend to massify it once we get additional funding. But what we, the approach we take is that we don't have to wait for the EU. I think it's a matter that is very urgent. In terms of whether are there any other campaigns, yes, we have a campaign. I don't know if you see in our presentation, we've got a byline where we talk about corruption. We say, I know what is corruption, and I act whenever I see corruption, and I do something to stop corruption. That's our byline, and that's the campaign we are running. And we are in partnership with the JCPS cluster, the Hawks, the NPA, the police, and ourselves, and we're working on once we get more funding, because we believe that there's a lot that we can get South Africans talking around the issue of corruption. In fact, the reason we even developed this script was after we went out in communities and just in city center to say, do you know what is corruption? It was amazing how much communities don't know what is corruption. They just use it. And when we were posing questions like, do you think by, you know, paying to get a driver's license is corruption? It's amazing that, no, I don't see it as a corruption. So our campaign is based on that approach to say we need to educate South Africans that it is a societal issue, the issue of corruption. It's not just government. Even in shops, when you steal from your employer in a shop, you actually bankrupt that business. It can go under, and you can end up not getting a job. So I think we have a campaign that we're running. We also have a campaign on fighting corruption, crime. We're also working with the police around that, and there's a lot of work that we have done. But importantly, we also have a campaign about creation of jobs. One of our research that we've done, we've established that a lot of young people don't see themselves creating their own jobs. They see themselves waiting to be employed. And the approach of our campaign is that you can create a job yourself and even involve your colleagues. And we're working with DTI, we're working with small businesses, and it's a campaign that is also in our grid in what we're doing. But yes, there's a lot of work around those campaigns that we're trying to profile as we go forward. It's just that nationally you don't see them visibly enough because we don't have the funding to buy airtime on SABC or whatever, but it, on a ground level, there's a lot of work that we are doing around those campaigns. And thanks, Mike.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair and members, a very helpful question. That's a chance to sing a bit. Chairperson, our stakeholder has a broad network, and if I may just to share with the House three areas. I mean, firstly, we have community civil society groups largely through our provinces. So the stakeholders there would be twofold that the provinces work with. They are very closely networked, as the DG was saying, with civil society groups, NGOs, faith-based structures. So when we lobby together, like we've been doing for the Tambo campaign, like we've been doing for gender-based violence, as DG was showing you, it's very easy to pull together in a locality various structures. Tribal authorities and leadership in traditional structures, very close partnership with us. So that's in the outreach side. The second group at the national level, which I'm responsible for, Chair, is the clusters of government. So those two cluster chief directors, their stakeholders, would be the ambit of government communicators. But I must also say, Chair, what we've been doing in the last year is intensifying our relationship with technical colleagues. So when we did the Oceans Economy launch, we don't only talk to communicators, we're making sure that the colleagues who are experts on that topic can go on the community radio, they can be available to speak to journalists, to communities as well, because they're the people who actually deal with program implementation. And then the third leg is the media sector, the chief director dealing with media engagement, and the colleague on the extreme right there, Liesl, who deals with parliament. So with the media engagement, obviously it's print, electronic, it's formal, it's commercial media as well as community-based media, but also, obviously, as the Honourable Member was saying, definitely regarding our Members of Parliament as critical stakeholders in our group. And I'm delighted, I hope, Chairperson, that Liesl hasn't been giving me incorrect information, but I'm delighted, Chairperson, that our IRC here remains a hub of activity to use members as our stakeholders. So please, that's broadly, Chair, in a broad pace, what the stakeholder means. To be specific, we always welcome the work and partnership with constituency offices. As you may have seen, they're little presences in province. They're not big offices or big units, as sometimes people may think. And therefore, we cannot always reach all constituency offices. But I must say, those district offices, Chair, that you visited earlier this year as the portfolio committee, they definitely have constituency offices as their one of their principal partnership networks. We do bring material there, but unfortunately, there are two factors. We don't have as much material as we would like, and secondly, we don't always have the ability to reach out. I mean, you saw my slide. We've had to cut back some of our presence so we can effect saving for the company as a whole. But please be aware, Honourable Members, particularly working with yourselves and the colleagues in the Secretariat, when you go out, we always make sure that those kind of visits can be used to cascade and to build on messaging with radio stations, etc. So yes, we're very, very open to partnership like that. Sorry, just one additional information, Chair, sorry. We do publish on all our books, our annual reports, our documents, the database of the offices, and I don't think DG would be a problem. We could gladly share with the portfolio committee the full database of and the names of the district offices, etc., with the committee with great pleasure. But please note that all GISAF documents will have our provincial office contact information and the name of the director on it as well.
Thank you, Honourable Members. And please let me just echo the sentiments of our acting DG. Thank you for the compliment, Honourable Member. The one thing about it is that it does encourage us, because at least we know that our efforts are having some kind of impact when we get some feedback. And I'd be very curious to also hear from you which platforms you've seen the profile of our Tambo on, because we've been putting them out on many, many different platforms, and also on the partnership with DOJ, because it means that the community radio station platform is working. On the question that specifically that the Honourable Member Van Dyke is asking about, if I could be allowed to just give briefly a bit of a history on this thing. We've been through various distribution methodologies at the GCIS. Currently, the one we are using is where we are appointing a company to distribute we've appointed company by tender every 2 years, and then that company uses a combination methodology. So we have some bulk drop-off points, like for example all the GCIS offices, Tusong service centers, and certain clinics around the country where we know that they will be distributed, and then we also do door-to-door. And then we sometimes do activations to increase the awareness. So we do taxi rank activations, you know, station, train station activations and so on. Now, we have been asked in this house, well, not in this room, but by this committee before, what about the possibility of dropping off constituency officers? We've checked this out. It's a good idea, but it will cost us an extra 600,000, of which we don't have the budget right now. So what we should be looking at is some kind of a parliament-government, you know, partnership where we could talk about that. In fact, one of the members in this committee has asked us before, why are we bringing the copies here into the pigeonholes when, you know, we could be using those copies to distribute to communities? But, you know, my colleague to the right of me will attest, you're an important stakeholder, because what you tell your communities about the book is what we want you to do. In fact, if you ask us for additional copies, we can deliver them to you here at Parliament, so that would be quite easy. The cheapest out of those combination methodologies that I'm talking about is knock and drop. So, and the reason why it's cheap is because we combine together with other, the distributor combines with other companies that are wanting to distribute their material. So, for example, if ShopRite has got some specials on a Checkers or something like that, then the distributor combines it, and so they choose a certain area, they use GIS mapping based on Stats SA's, you know, districts, and then they drop off at the top of every street, just like how we used to do once upon a time when you do door-to-door. So that's the cheapest methodology, and that's what we're using. If you look at that, when you average it out, we spend about 1.90 rand per copy to print and to distribute. So it's still quite a low cost, but it's not low enough considering that we don't feel that the book is, that there's enough of the books, first of all, and we're not sure that we're necessarily making the best out of the platform. One of the things that helps us is that we've got an approval from Treasury, that we an approval from Cabinet as well, that government departments can include Vuk'uzenzele as one of the platforms in which to place recruitment advertising. So government departments do place recruitment advertising with us, and then at least on one occasion, that money has enabled us to print an additional edition in 2016. So the more we can build this capacity, the more we will be able to raise money to further the distribution and increase the copies. Where we distribute to, we still focus primarily with the print copy on the old definitions of the LSM 1 to 5. So what we do is we focus on areas that do not have access to mainstream media. And if you looked at that slide, you'll see even in the provincial areas, in the provincial distribution, we focus primarily on those areas that don't have access. And often you'll hear the stories of people saying, you know, people that have followed the distributor, they'll say, you know, when you go out there, there's nothing. There's no TV. There's sometimes not even radio. There's just, you know, an old person or a young person sitting, because that's the profile of our rural area sitting with the Vuk'uzenzele. However, we did decide a few years ago that the material in the Vuk'uzenzele is so important for even other LSMs that we want to extend its reach, but without budget. What we did is we've got the Vuk'uzenzele website, which is hosted on the gov.za website, and we also have a book app which you can download for free at the App Store. One of the prohibitive factors is that it still costs some data to download the copies of the book, to update it, but we're working on that. So we're trying to see how we can reduce the data costs. But it's a multiple distribution methodology that tries to cover all different sectors and areas. I'm not sure if I've answered it adequately.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, with your permission, Chair, I'd like to defer the SABC question of the journalist to my colleague on my right, but just safe to say that we're not complaining that some of the journalists go to the alternative media, because I think it is the way to go for some of us. Thank you very much.
Members, those are the responses. Any follow-up? Because we'll have to cross over to DOC. Are we fine? Attend to that question of journalists. Before you start with your decision. And the rental.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I can venture into speculating, and that would not be correct. But as my colleague says, I don't think that there is anything wrong with that, because one of our priorities as a department is ensuring that there is a plurality of voice, and that alternative media and community media is also encouraged. By the way, one of the things that I've learned is that most of commercial media draws a lot from people who are trained and who have worked in community media. So there is always that relationship, which I don't think must be frowned upon. But I think obviously SABC has its own challenges. They've been before this house a couple of times. We may say it's linked to that, but that would really be speculating. Chairperson, and thank you very much for the opportunity. On the issue of the rental, I think CFO, when she speaks on the budget, she'll address that. But I must tell you, since I've become acting DG, every time I walk with an entity, whether it's GCIS or SABC, I am dwarfed. Because for DOC and its science and the responsibility we have in terms of overseeing all these different entities, including the GCIS, it becomes very obvious that we are undercapacitated from a budgeting point of view and from a human resource point of view. So being a squatter is but the only option we have right now. Chairperson, going straight into the presentation, Chair has asked that
you can quickly. You can introduce your team first.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. There is Ms. Matope Tusi. She's the head of corporate services. And Ms. Tindisa Mahopa, she's the CFO. I'll go straight into slide 5. Because the first few slides are really talking about the strategic goals and all of that. Chairperson, in terms of the first quarter performance, we had 21 planned activities. We have achieved 18, and we have not achieved 3. The 2 are in program 1, and the 1 is in program 2, which is the communication and research and development. Overall, I think 86% performance for the department for the first quarter. Moving straight into program 1, I think first is to highlight the things that we have not achieved. That's the updated register that was not submitted to National Treasury, and the risk management plan, which was not signed off. The reason I was given why we have not done so is that the benchmarking process that we were supposed to undertake took longer than we expected, and we expect to have completed this work in this quarter. In terms of the achievements of Program 1, really it's around compliance. We have been able to submit to the AG and Treasury our annual financial statements and performance information. We have developed and approved the departmental risk register. We have also the internal strategic plan and the risk-based internal audit annual report, which was signed off by the audit risk committee. We have done a progress report on financial compliance and performance audits against our operational plan. We also have commissioned an evaluation study on the implementation of the awareness campaign for our flagship project, which is the broadcasting digital migration, which we are completing now in the second quarter. In terms of continuing with the work, we report on outcome 4. So we did submit our 2016-17 fourth quarter report to the Department of Arts and Culture. We have also submitted the following reports as per the requirement: the human resource plan, the annual training report, and the workplace skills plan to PCTA. I've recently had a discussion with the team around the workplace skills plan. The type of financial constraints that the department is facing is such that even for the skills plan, we are relying only on free training. So we can't budget for empowering our employees at this point in time, which is not a very good thing. Because if you look at the mandate of the department, especially in relation to the digital work we have to do, we have to be upskilling, and we don't have the money to do that. Going into the department and the vacancies, we have 79 total approved vacancies, 72 of which are filled. We only have 7 vacant. We are busy, and later on in the report, we have an update of how far we are with that. And then we have 21 contract positions, the 12 of which are for the DTT Program Management Office, and then we have 3 in industry research, 2 in the minister's office and the DM's office, 1 in the DG's office, and 1 in entity oversight. I think the profiling of those positions is really positions of staff who had contracts, long-term contracts with the former minister, who we have had to allocate to support the work that is currently happening because we still had running contracts with them. In terms of employment equity, we are sitting at 55% female senior managers and 45% male. In terms of disability, we are at 1.3%. Moving over to the program 2, which is communication policy and research. This is the branch which we all call the core of the department because that is where policy is supposed to be driven from. In terms of our first target, which is on the audiovisual and digital content bill work that is being done, that work has been seriously delayed. We anticipated to start with the process of stakeholder engagements on the bill. However, my understanding is that the last year when the department took the bill to cabinet, there were certain ministers who were supposed to be consulted around issues of competition, around the issues of foreign ownership and the likes. And those engagements, although have happened at the level of officials, we have not managed as yet to finalize the consultation happening at ministerial level. And that would mean then that we can take it back to cabinet for approval, and only then we can undertake this stakeholder consultation. I think when we come back to report in the second quarter, we will be recording considerable progress in this regard. The second project which has been achieved is around the draft position paper on media transformation. I will not dwell into this presentation. Suffice to say, one of the things that the department is going to be looking at now with the direction of the minister around media transformation is exploring creating councils, BEE councils for print media. Already GCIS had done some work on the Council for Advertising and Marketing, so we are also looking at what structure this this council will form. Do we have a separate structure for advertising and marketing and then create a new structure for print media? What do we do with broadcasting that is currently with the DTPS? So that is the work that this branch will be looking at to suggest to the minister what direction she must take in trying to contribute to media diversity. On program 3, which is industry and capacity development, well, the department is responsible for implementing the public awareness campaign for the DTT project. In the first quarter, the target was to have 2 public awareness campaigns. But as CFO was saying to me, where there is limited resources, people become very innovative and very creative. And one of the innovation has been demonstrated here because the team was forced to explore other platforms through which we can leverage on to do public awareness. As a result, there's been an overachievement because in the first quarter, we've managed in partnership with other departments and provincial governments to participate in 31 events where we were able to do DTT public awareness. The next one is the number of, is a report on showing consumer access to digital broadcasting. This has been done, and just in summary, registrations for set-top boxes was at 95,517 and 50,917 set-top boxes were distributed. Just a bit more on the digital migration project. I think I spoke earlier on about the skills in the department and the lack of budget for upskilling, yet we have such an important project which we are supposed to undertake. As one of the means of trying to deal with the issues of getting technical expertise from the private sector to work on this project, Minister has established what we are calling a Digital Migration Advisory Council. When she came in, we were briefed that there used to be a similar structure before, which was responsible for designing the project. So this structure which she's creating is a very similar concept. It's really a group of experts in the field made up of telecoms industry as well as broadcasters who are going to, as a collective team, be advising the minister as we roll out the broadcasting digital migration project. And the areas we'll be focusing on really is the awareness campaigns and the registration campaigns, distribution networks, and installations. The focus areas, without wasting too much of your time, will really be around exploring existing platforms where we could utilize to reach more citizens, because one thing we have realized is that not a lot of people know about broadcast, the digital migration project, which is the public education aspect to it, that even if you are not going to receive a set-top box, you still must be migrated, you must still have a set-top box. Our people don't know that. But also what it means and how to, what the technology brings to them. So that's the public awareness. And then there is the issue of registration for those community members who must be given subsidized set-top boxes. So it's really to create a drive, a public awareness drive and a public education drive, but also to encourage the broadcasters, because right now, in the market, there is no set-top box for the unsubsidized market. So part of the work of this council would be to see how we can encourage that the broadcasters start rolling out more of the set-top boxes and more are found in the commercial market. In terms of registration, distribution, and installations, which is slide 16, it's just giving an overview. I'm not going to go into that. I think what is interesting to note is that work is underway to finalize the recruitment of the 2,700 young people who are going to be trained to be installers in this, which for us is a contribution to our situation of young people being unemployed. We are also in discussion with the MICC, City CETA, who are considering to train an additional number of young people in this regard. Moving forward to still under Program 3, around the work we are doing in international relations, we have two activities. The one was our participation in Geneva on the issue of the broadcasting treaty. I think that we've participated and we'll be going back in November. The issues there is to deal with issues of piracy and in the age of internet. So our position is very clear on that as a country. The second one was coordinated by, was the BRICS meeting, which we participated in preparation for the current visit that the president is undertaking, but also for when South Africa take over as the chairperson. Moving over to entity oversight, there were two targets, and both of which have been achieved. The one is to develop quarterly oversight reports and submit it to the minister, as well as facilitating the funding requests, processing the funding requests from the entity. Now, just to quickly highlight, and maybe I will not go too much into this, this is an overview of the key milestones in relation to the respective entities in terms of the report that we have presented to the executive authority. Suffice to say that FPB met 82% of its target, that 18% were not achieved. ICASA met 70% of their targets. Brand SA, 96% of their targets. SABC, 18% of their target. MDDA, 70% of their target. I think we can go, if members are more interested, in detail in terms of where the issues are in terms of the variance in the performance. Now, Chairperson, if you will allow me, I'll hand over to CFO to take us through the financial information. Thank you.
Are you on holiday?
Thanks, Chair. I wish I could be on leave. Honourable Chair, our budget is in total 1.4 billion, of which the spending is only at 23%. In terms of the straight line projections, we are supposed to be at 25%, but we are at 23% because most of the transfers that were supposed to go to SABC in the first quarter, they didn't do the request on time, so there were 10 delaying effects. That's why you see us not on the 25%. But Program 1 have spent 26%, which is above what is required. Program 2, that's where the policy unit is sitting, we are only at 14%. And the expenditure there depends on the approval of certain processes and certain acts for them to do the consultation in provinces. And Program 3, we are at 26%. While we are at Program 3, Honorable Chair, it's nice that even though we have spent 26%, by the end of August, we have received a letter from National Treasury. They have approved our rollover request of 11 million. So there is no way we will overspend in Program 3. We will be within our budget. Entity oversight, the bigger chunk of that money is supposed to transfer. So hope that money will all be spent by the end of the year. That is in the in terms of the chart, how we show the spending in relation to the programs. Compensation of employees is at 21%. Goods and services, you can see chairperson, we are at 34% instead of 25%. And that's where the question of the rentals and whatever comes in, chair, that given where we are sitting, it's going to be very difficult for us even to come to Cape Town until the end of the financial year to come and account in this house, because our budget won't be enough to deal with that. Chairperson, we have, during the MTEC process, submitted all the requests to Treasury in relation to funding for rental goes with accommodation. So in our case, if we had money for rental, it would be better for us to go and get our own space. But because we don't even have a cent to go and pay the rental, we can't even find our own space. And during our request to Treasury was to say, we have DTT project, which is our core project for the department, which we are looking for funding. We have accommodation issues, which really impact on the performance of GCIS in terms of IT. In our submission, we said even if they are not giving us money for accommodation, but we also require them to consider giving us money for license fees for software, Microsoft Office and other things, so that we can assist GCIS even in terms of maintenance of the IT infrastructure in relation to the part that we are using. And it doesn't look like we will win the chair, because the letter we have received, we did two submissions. The unavoidable, unforeseeable expenditure, we are still waiting for that response where we're talking about this thing. The other one, we capitalized on the money that ICASA is surrendering. ICASA will be surrendering 123 million back to National Treasury by the end of September. So we're saying instead of that money going back to the National Treasury, can they consider giving money to the department so that we can be able to do that? The letter says to us, as oversight department, we must not think we have the ability to can retain the money from our entities as we wish. So we are not entitled to that amount, and they are not giving us any cent out of it. And remember, Chairperson, last year, for us to be able to be sustained until the end of the financial year is because we have received 41 million from the same ICASA that sustained us until the end of the financial year. So in this year, if we are not going to get any cent out of it, it will be really disastrous for the Department of Communication to continue to function in the line that we are. The economic classification in terms of the chart is presented there. You can see the bigger chunk of our budget is only goes to transfers. That's why you think we have a lot of money. But in aggregate, if you look, our budget is only 100 million out of that 1.4 billion budget that we are having. I'm not going to talk to the slides on update of the vacant position. For sure, DG and Matuba will talk to it. But I just want to give the committee the feedback on the audit process that we have just completed now, given all the challenges that we face. As a portfolio of communication, we have received 3 clean audits. That is the department, GCIS, and the brand SA. And these are the entities that even in last year they were clean. We had an unqualified audit in 3 entities with the Films and Publications Board, ICASA, and MDDA. But Chairperson, safe to say that the AG has made it very clear that in ICASA and MDDA, the minister must seriously intervene, because for them to arrive at that unqualified audit, ICASA has to agree to disclose more than 7 million of irregular expenditure for them to arrive at that, which shows that in terms of controls and systems, something needs to be done. And MDDA, they have regressed because in the last financial year, their matters of expenses were not many, but this year there are just a lot of things that need attention to because of lack of controls that need to be taken into consideration. SABC has received an adverse report basically because of a going concern status, meaning that, Chair, that when the financial statement for SABC were prepared, they were prepared in terms of an international framework for financial reporting standards, and they've taken them as a going concern issue. But all of us will know that SABC has applied for a government bailout. So as we are sitting now, SABC financial sustainability is in question because they are failing even to pay most of their creditors as we sit. So the AG said, based on that, even if we can look at other things, but the going concern issue is a serious matter that for you, you won't be able to survive until you can prove to us that there is enough budget to meet your contractual obligations. But there are a lot of issues that were raised in terms of their procurement process, also in terms of their payment of bonuses that were irregular, and all those issues are part of the management report that they have. And as I said, that MDDA, ICASA and SABC requires intervention from the minister, because if those things that they have raised cannot be attended, the AG has this thing to say, if there are repeated findings, maybe entities that have received unqualified, if they repeat, the same findings are repeated next year, they will automatically regress into qualification because it says there are no controls to look at those mechanisms. And the issues that were raised, even though we were clean as the OC, but there were issues that require serious attention that we must look at. That is our IT management and monitoring. That is our accruals and commitment and contingent liabilities confirmations and oversight and governance structures of our entities. What it says here, Chairperson, it says, if there are collapse of controls in the entity, DOC will lose their clean status because there is no way DOC could be clean when the entities are in a mess. And that says to us, we need to look at holistical legislation, what empowers the minister to intervene in these entities without being called interference, but to assist them to perform better in a manner that will assist the AG to audit. So this calls for upskilling of skills and other things to be put in place in the minister to perform these functions properly, Chair. In terms of contingent liabilities and confirmation, we have agreed with the AG that the timing difference and the language used by accountants and lawyers are different. And as we close the books on the 31st of May, we receive confirmation from the legal firm. But when the AG audit, they request information. And when the information is given to auditors, it's as of the period that they are doing. And obviously, there is a difference because the timing that they are asking the information is different. And that's where we said maybe they must look at the way we can match our request form so that we can all of us be on the same page and get the same outcome from this process. GCIS, Chairperson, you'll agree that when GCIS coughs, we also cough with them because they are mixed twins. The IT infrastructure, we are the same. Accruals and commitments, we are the same. Because remember, the bigger chunk of the year for last year, we were relying on GCIS for supply chain, except for the last quarter that we were there. AG has highlighted that there is a need to have the standard operating procedure for media rights to deal with the competitiveness and the transparency in the process. And he also indicated inconsistencies in the annual performance report and contingent liabilities, as I said. In Brand SA, there were issues of overstatement of provisions, leave balance, performance information targets not included in the APP or the annual performance report, and supply chain management, which resulted in non-compliance with treasury regulations. FPB is an issue of performance information which needs serious attention, because in terms of the AG report, he says 21 indicators out of the all indicators for the year, they couldn't meet the standard of usefulness and reliability, and no sufficient audit evidence could be provided. So that goes to the way that we coin our annual performance plan and our strategic planning document, so that we can deal with that. And as a result, yes, the AG has said that the accounting authority has failed to perform adequate responsibility on the issue, and there were serious misstatements on financial statement, which they allowed them to correct so that they can remain on the unqualified audit. And then he also mentioned that the audit committee was not effective in performing their function. In ICASA, there's just a lot of issues, Chair, as outlined there. The irregular expenditure of 27.5 million, which is a recurring issue. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 12.2 million. Material misstatement on AFS, on performance information. They can't even pay the service providers within 30 days. And the procurement and contract management is not in line with the treasury regulations. Where you find goods above 5,000 which must go out on tender, they do it through the quotation system. And this puts to say that the accounting authority is failing to ensure that there is a proper leadership and oversight in the entity. And these issues are so serious that if they occur again, this entity can regress to a qualification or an address if this matter are not attended. MDDA is about the issue of performance information, procurement and contract management, which they are not, is not in line with treasury regulation, the triple PFA and the triple BEE, and the irregular expenditure of 6.7 million. And unfortunately, if the contract that the AG has looked at in this year that made this irregular expenditure of 6.7 are recurring. So the irregular expenditure is going to recur, because as long as the initial process of awarding that contract was irregular and there are no mechanism to deal with that, it means the irregular expenditure in MDDA will be continuing until the end of those contracts that they have awarded, unless they find mechanism of cancelling the contract and find a mechanism of dealing with that. So as a result, they were forced to do some major corrections on their financial statement to ensure that they remain within the unqualified process. SABC, as I said, is a going concern. If they are accounts payable, that some of their invoices were not recorded in the correct accounting periods. There were two special bonuses that were paid that were seen to be not in accordance with the HR policies, and they couldn't finalize the irregular expenditure at 4.4 billion due to insufficient documentation. Also, their management of property, plant and equipment is not in good shape because they couldn't give the AG the proper valuation role in terms of their property. The TV license is an issue. We all know what has happened in that one, and that also has an effect on their revenue, wherein they had the agreement to include discounts offered to clients, and they had to be revised now with the current interim policy. So all these issues has affected. These are the key issues, but if you look at their management report, there will be a lot of issues that the AG has raised that I didn't pick up on this one. So, Chairperson, that is the status. The formal report will be submitted to Parliament by the end of September, and they will be tabled here formally for you to know, but we felt it proper that you don't have to get it through the media what has happened. Just just get the highlights of what has happened during the audit. Thanks, Didi. Thanks, Jefferson.
Jefferson, if you will allow me, I think the last point is really around the update on the status of the filling of positions. Last week, when I was asked, I tried to report on it, but this essentially is the real reflection. We only have 7 vacant positions. The headhunting for the DG is in progress. We are scheduling the interviews for the 2 DDGs. The internal audit appointment is almost at approval stage. It's with ministry, and then there's the other positions. We are in different stages. The asset manager interviews have been done, so this really is just a reflection of how far we are, but we are prioritizing filling these positions. But also, just to add, what CFO didn't indicate was that we also had asked additional money for filling of posts from Treasury as well, and it doesn't look like we will be getting anything for that too. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Yeah.
Members will proceed until we adjourn. I'm looking at the time, and half past 12 must be done. Questions? Oh, there is tea, but it must be arranged. There is tea and coffee there. We can do that as we proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DG, for the report. Chairperson, my first and foremost, I would like to raise the fact that as long as you don't the necessary speed to fill your vacant posts, especially in the DG1. I hear the report. There's progress. However, because what you are raising reminds me of the commitment that was made by the committee to say we're all concerned and convinced that the department is seriously underfunded. There's an agreement on that. And also, we are convinced that between yourselves and Treasury, we are not going to fire each other due to many attempts that we have been embarking on, but without any proof. I think it needs some kind of political discussion that might be led by the chairperson, as the person who's responsible for the team that is doing the oversight. Because it sometimes creates a problem for us to have to ask all the questions and want you to do everything that you expect him to do with the little funding that we have. Sometimes we feel very much unfair until you do that. So, I think there is that commitment on the table that I think you must follow. Until such time you can just say this is now a conclusive decision, there isn't much that you can do. But also, if government wants this department to what it has been established to be, it must be properly funded, or else it must do away. Two things for this department committee. So I really wanted to recommit on your behalf. Chairperson, my big gripe is with the entities. The department will forgive us. We are just coming from both oversight and the experience with the MDDA. ICASA and even the Bojas. I am still looking forward, Chairperson, to a meeting between ourselves with the minister, where the minister will come and present to us her strategy to make sure that she changed things around in all entities. Because that's what we need now. In between her coming in almost 4 to 5 months,
instead of progress, things are beginning to be even more worse, and I'm very worried. I think she really must come, of course, having considered on what she wants to do in trying to change things over in all entities. She must come and present that, because as CFO was saying, if whatever you do as a department, if those entities are at the level where they are now, it's like all what you're doing is a futile exercise. So I really want to emphasize this, that says minister must come, because look, you say as long as the minister will not be seen as a person who's interfering, for me that's a problem. There can be no interference, because there are laws that govern that are very clear. It's just that people want to be a little bit mischievous and even more opportunistic, because they sometimes exploit the issue of the transition from the former minister to the new minister. And sometimes the fact that they are in very strategic roles, so they are acting people. So we are unable to follow to its conclusive thing, the issue of accountability. So, Chairperson, I really want to say, with the entities, I think we are also almost at the middle of the second quarter. Means the report that you are going to bring is not going to change, but it might also be a little bit worse than it is now. So, for that reason, we really need that meeting with the minister, so that together we can hold a little bit tighter to entities in particular, for them to follow the logo. I think HOT, we are from KZN. With MGDA, with the report that you can table, you'll be so embarrassed. Means a lot of things are happening and they are so wrong. We have just concluded the SAPs, of which we think there's going to be some changes. We have been with the ICASA in our strategic session, where we could listen to officials contesting between themselves who is bigger than each other, which is, for me, was totally unacceptable. But it is happening. It means people will get away with murder insofar as accountability is concerned. So I really want to emphasize this thing that says whatever you'll be doing, very good work, it will always be undermined by what is happening in the entities. And until the minister puts a finger into those entities, we will always find ourselves in this mess. And we must be assured of the fact that Treasurer will never be able to listen to you on whatever problems that you are facing with what is happening in the entities presently. If there's that report with the ICASA and you go back to the Treasurer and say you want more money, surely they said, go away, who do you think you are? You are not going to do as you wish. There are rules here. Because they look at your status and they start to say you are unable to manage the little money that you are having, and you want more. How come? So I just want to raise that grand person to say there's a need. It's more, even more urgent now, for the minister to really hold her hands very firm to the entities. She might go to an extent of being unpopular for the sake of the department, because Chairperson, as a democratic government, if we are unable to do things that we committed to say we are going to do, no one will take us seriously. And we can't sit with our communities and tell them the story that you are telling us. They won't be able to listen to that. So I'm just saying, I know these are politics, Chairperson, but there is a political deployee that is responsible to take charge of that. There's a team here that is showing its capabilities and its commitment. Let that be done as early as now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm yet to see a country where Department of Communications. In other words, they say propaganda. funded so much. All departments are important, but this department, it's about communicating what government does, isn't it? And if the budget is so little, maybe other countries must learn from other countries as to how government communications, Department of Communication, is funded. Because those are the cornerstones of communicate with the people. I listened with interest some time ago when the Minister of Communication, I think it was propaganda in Iraq, where when they were bombarded by America, just to keep the morale of the people, he kept on saying, we are dealing with America like anything. And the country was taken over, but he had to communicate that to the people. Very important. Mamacho.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Well, your presentation is, I don't want to lie, it's very efficient and with a clear direction. But there's this document, the GCI document, this one, or communication. Yeah, it's because it's like black and white to me. So, no, mine, Chair, is in page 16. Pre-registration and distribution and installation. Pardon? Yeah, in page 16. It says here there are 7 provinces that get a partnership. It says a partnership has been established with the Department of Public Works. Train $2,700 young people and women. Mine gets here is the clarity of what about other 2 provinces, Western Cape and Gauteng, because I don't see their involvement. So when are you going to engage Western Cape plus Gauteng? Secondly, Chair, I want to raise this question here because, or as a concern, where you can assist the EU Minister in terms of the department to look at this. I have a crisis, a big crisis in my area. The community wrote a letter, I think it was on May, to engage with the minister to come down in Guguletu because there's a crisis of the radio. And I could see now the MDDA, there's a problem in the MDDA. How can you assist in terms of going down to communicate with the community stakeholders in terms of these problems I'm facing now? Because I need any assistance. Many letters we wrote to the minister. I know the minister is the principal.
Which community is that? You didn't mention the community.
Guguletu.
Guguletu.
And we need a very special attention as soon as possible, even by next week. Because I don't want the community to be in the streets. And really, we are facing the we are no longer to face the elections. Maybe the elections will take place in 2019. and the community continuing reporting that they don't see anything, and the radio station, of which Minister Mutambi was in Gugulethu in 2016, to give the community this radio station. Then the MDDA take over to start the processes. But now there's a crisis of which I will not say the crisis, I will not say anything now about the crisis, but I need any department to go down by next week to assist OMDDA to go there in the community. I don't want this thing to be open and been seen, to be seen by the media, though I know I'm talking this for in the nation are listening, but I don't want to dwell more about this. So I need that assistance. I'll need Chaukutu if they can assist in terms of going down by next week. And even those programs that are talking about, we really need those trainings and those communications for the benefit of the community. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I think MDDA needs to be on that issue. It, thank you very much, Honourable Member. MDDA needs to be engaged on that one because it's their role. Honourable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is on page slide 11. The 30% government ad spend. Since we started with this committee, this message has been coming through, and I see that you say now that it must be enforced. I want to know, what are you actually going to do to enforce it? Because otherwise we're going to see this for the next presentations. We need to take action. What is the action plan? Then on slide 16, the same. The information that was presented to this committee, we also received this on the set-up boxes that's in the SAPA warehouses. That's also information that we've been receiving in the past as with the people that must be trained. So when are these people actually going to be trained? Are we going to be ready? I think a lot of people have a misconception that DTT is only about TV. but in the matter of the fact, it's actually about freeing spectrum currently used mainly by TV, so that there's enough wireless broadband internet access to the entire country. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people miss. I want to know from you, at this stage, there's only 5 core towns in the Northern Cape where the SKA area where the migration process is actually have been completed with analog switch off. And the Minister Mutambi said that the process of analog switch off will be completed by 2018. I want to know if this is a realistic, achievable deadline for full migration, and what solutions are actually in place to counter setbacks. And then also, I wonder if it's possible that there will be a complete review on the DTT migration program can be made available. Do you have something like that, so that we can determine if its current format it actually is the best route that we're taking to achieve our outcomes? Then also, I want to just ask you on the DTT, I want to find out from you if you actually this year, was there a budget put in for elimination, as apparently previously there was no budget for that and you had to get money from another department. And then also irregular expenditure, I missed the amount on that. Can you just give that to me again? Thank you.
Is that all? Can we just go to page, this slide, okay, slide 30. Just go to slide 13 and open page 16. Are you on page 13? 1-3. On set-top boxes distributed and installed to houses, to households, it's 50,000. And then registration recorded is 95. Ne? And then you go to page 16, the total registration is 244, and the total distribution 96. Can you explain that? Do you see? The total registration is 244,662. And then that's page 16, and then distribution is 96,424. And then when you go to page 13, it's something else. Can I understand that? Do you have another question then?
Actually, that's my one question to you.
Come again?
Actually, there was actually one.
You missed one question?
Yes, okay. Yes. Oh, actually.
Go ahead.
On slide 29, you indicate that you headhunted for vacant positions, and then everything was done within a very short period, and then only 3 months later. Why did it take so long to actually do the interviews? I'm just curious about that. 3 months.
Oh, can you take all the questions Mr. Kalako had, or you want to deal with this and then? Yeah. And? Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Maybe to start with the last question around the filling of positions. The reality is that to convene a panel of interviewing DGs and DDGs means that you have to get a certain number of ministers. That scheduling is quite complex. As we speak, it's GCIS, DG, GCIS, DDGs, and DOC. So we are having to get that many panels going. And in two instances where we had the date, we've had a minister having to travel abroad or something like that. So that scheduling, coupled with coming to Cape Town, has been our biggest problem, because we must have a fully constituted panel of ministers to be able to interview. But like I said, the ministry is trying every day to make sure that whenever all the ministers are available, that we can have those interviews. That's the simplest way. The department has, we've done everything. We've shortlisted, we've done everything. We just need to be able to convene that panel of ministers to be able to do the interviews. Idu from GCIS phones me weekly, and we in 10 phone ministry weekly. They also do the same. So we are really working on making sure that we secure the dates and get the interviews to sit. The second last question was from the chairperson. Chairperson, on slide 13, it is for the quarter, which is the first quarter of 2017-18. So that's the number of registrations that happened within and the number of distribution. In slide 16, it is the total since the project was initiated. So that is the difference. I'm sorry about that. Then On dual illumination, I understand it still has to continue, and Centec, although they don't have the money, will still have to find the money somewhere, because unless we have completely migrated, they still have to do that. So it's still continuing. And as far as I know, they have requested from Treasury. In fact, when we went to Treasury for the DTT, we presented a comprehensive budget proposal, which included USASA, ourselves, and Centec. And we did also ask for them to give us money for the dual illumination. On the review of the model, the one thing that in terms of the Minister of Finance 12-point plan he has said we need to do is going forward is to review the procurement model, because one of the biggest problems was that. But if you talking about the review of the entire project, it becomes difficult when you are faced with the 2018 December deadline. And that's part of the work that this advisory committee needs to look at. In the market, we know that there are IDTVs, for instance, which can be a replacement of set-top boxes. But you have a policy that says for this amount, you subsidize a set-top box. So it would mean a policy review, that's one, but it would also mean that you have to speak to the TV manufacturers to get IDTVs as a cheaper rate into the market. It would mean that even if you tried, the 2018 deadline would not be met. But as I said, Minister has put together this advisory, which will look at everything. Because even as you look at the numbers now, with the set-top boxes, you are not guaranteed that you can be able to actually do it, because we have not procured, and because USASA's process is still in court. So as that process is delayed, getting closer to 2018 becomes a bit more difficult. I think it will be the role of the advisory council that we re-look at how we do the model going forward, and that they advise the minister as such. The issue of spectrum, I think we have an appreciation of that, and that is why Minister has said in the advisory it's not only broadcasters, it is also the telecoms industry, because we understand the relationship between the two and the need to move that spectrum to be used by them. And they have come on board to say, because they have an interest, they are willing to do and support the minister through the advisory committee in whatever way, so that we move forward. One of the things that the team has been looking at is how it is possible perhaps to identify provinces, and once you finish a province, you release that spectrum. It's one of the options, and those are some of the things that the advisory council would have to look at. On the issue of 30% ad spend, I must say that the slide that we are reflecting is the recommendations that are coming out of the position paper. Now the work, as I had said in my introduction, that we need to now do now is to say what programmatically will the department be doing to do that. And that's why I spoke about the charter and the council that is going to be looking at the different sectors around that, but also other enforcement mechanisms to ensure that we really have media transformation. On the issues from Honorable Machoba, I'm happy that there is the option of maybe the department and MDDA going, because maybe our preoccupation has always been to get the minister to go, and we've been trying to work towards that. But maybe next week, I don't think it's a problem that we detach this budget team from DOC and from MDDA to go to the area and see how we can assist. On the issues of slide 16, once again, you asked that we clarify where is Western Cape and Gauteng. The list here is what has been done in terms of the distribution, but the 2,700 youth
will be taking 10 from each municipality in all the provinces. So Western Cape and Gauteng is where we are still going. We have not even touched those two provinces in terms of the rollout, but they are counted in terms of their allocation when it comes to the number of young people that will be trained. I think Honorable Dolashe's intervention was more around the need for minister to come here, so I will not really be responding to that, except to committing to convey the message and try to get the minister to meet the committee as soon as possible. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Kalakwa.
Thank you, sir. Mine are more around the finances. Firstly, I hope I'm correct if I conclude that the debate around encryption and non-encryption is over. That's a question. Because I know Minister, when she came in, there was this. And around that, what is the status of the court now? When ETV turned around now and said they want encryption, whereas firstly they challenged. And now, another question is around this court case. Is it is between USASA and the DOC? What were around this question of production and storage and this process of set-top boxes? Can you clarify that? Where it is? What is the problem? Why they can't settle this problem out of court? But coming back I want first to do, because under SABC, the audit report on employee compensation, you have said there were two special bonuses that were paid in the past fiscal year. How much is that amount? To whom was it paid? Did it include the 11 million commission or bonus of Chawudi Mutswaneng that was actually so bold in our committee reported by Aguma insisting that he must be paid? It's normal because he secured that deal with DSTV. Is it include that? And also, because of many, you know, anarchy and movements during that time, can you confirm to us if there were, because there were just willy-nilly officials there, that top three especially, when they wake up in a good mood, they go to work and just give workers bonuses? Can you just explain that to us? And then and Chair, if they don't have that information of the, we want these names, they must come to you and those amounts, because we must deal with this issue and put it to finality. The irregular expenditure valued at 4.4 billion rands, or is it over what period? Can you explain what it involved to us, or can you give us that information so that we're able also there to begin to assist the new coming board in addressing these issues? Then on MDDA, on the management of irregular expenditure. Can we get the information? And it must be sent also to this committee. This irregular expenditure, was it on what exactly? So that at least it can help us. On ICASA, you mentioned you are talking of the management of irregular expenditure to the amount of 27.5 million, which you are saying is recurring. What was this? Why did they spend this money to? And why is it recurring is not actually solved? Or was there any action also taken by the DOC as an oversight body to actually make sure that those who have committed that are taken to book? And then coming to the wasteful and fruitless expenditure, also explain that 12.2 million. But besides explaining, I want to emphasize again, we want to get a written, recorded information in your hands for this committee on all these issues. Because, you know, we're tired of this thing, Chair. We get, we see, get the reports and then issues, so that we can follow ourselves on these issues. Then, Chair, I think I'm sure the minister will meet the minister. Definitely, she's going to come. I don't have a problem. She has already committed. It's just that we find, don't burden the minister that much. She's not coming to Parliament, because one of her duties is to be here. As officials, you are there to relieve some of the work so that she comes here. I think we have requested that she will come here and meet us. So to me, Chair, I think around these issues, because if we don't do that, this, I think as you were saying, CFO, very soon DOC will get a negative or adverse report. Maybe we'll be left just with GCIS, which it has been performing so far. Maybe Brand South Africa might improve on those issues. But the other three, I don't see if we don't. It's correct, the minister must intervene. I think they are in the act and legislation which can allow her to intervene on these others which have this problem. So I'll be so happy, Chair, if I can get this information, and especially around these major culprits which have driven SABC to what it is today. I know that the interim board have been dealing with these issues, have been reporting to us. I know the president has signed SIU, but you were there. Give us that information, those who were there. And that information, in fact, is there in your units and departments. Let's get it. We don't want to wait for a report of the SIU or the other investigation which was being done by the interim board. So, Chair, I will raise those areas so that we are able. The other issue which you must follow for us, in the last presentations,
when the leadership was still so dear mekaar in Afrikaans, in SABC, there was a report of, and the companies were sent to us, I discussed about three companies around procurement and production of set-top boxes, which there were allegations around those issues of corruption, if you remember, Chair. Can you go back and get that information and table it to us? Also, it goes there to there, so that we follow up on these issues, because it's just quiet now. It's the fight of the court in USASA and all around the set-top boxes. So, Chair, I'll just raise on.
Thank you very much. Before I go to Honorable Dolash, just on the STBs, you have given us the what is done, how many, and all of that. Are they operating? Or they are just there? So it's important to, you can see them all over, but are they really operate? Are they used? Or it's just a box that is there? Because if they are not activated, just sitting there, and if there is no follow-up check, after all that, then we'll be just dumping them. I listened to one time the CEO of ICASA, Pakamin, his view about boxes. And at some stage we need to just get into that. I'm not saying it's raise your view on that one. But we just need to interrogate that. But Honorable Kalako has raised a number of things in relation to the reports that must come. And I think, Honorable Member, we just need to say when. We really need to say when, because it must not be open-ended. I know that the Minister is available, as we got a report next week. But I know maybe the time may not. This thing of 30 days, it sometimes is not working. Even if the House is, Parliament is rising tomorrow for 2 weeks, but we need to utilize time that we have. Maybe in 2 weeks' time, Honorable Kalako, we must get to that report, those reports, because it's not one. Just within 2 weeks, and then we can see how to call members and look at all of them. Because they are very critical. Honorable Dolash.
Thank you, Chair. My question is just a small one. If the acting DG can just explain, within the department, that is the OC, there's a unit that is talking to overseeing of the entities by DOC. I just want to hear whether that unit exists, whether it is properly staffed, because as you are reporting, it seems like it's there by name. Of course, we realized that there were work bodies that we were with at some point as we were embarking on our oversight visits. But just take us through, because whatever minister will do and how she will intervene, the monitoring is still with yourselves as the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We're trying to fix the dates so that because the 20th, the 2 weeks falls on the 20th. Is that a Tuesday? Yeah. Maybe the 19th. We can see. We'll discuss as members as to
when can we be available? Because it's constituency and committee. Is it constituency? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what to do, but within 2 weeks, which falls on the 19th. Go ahead.
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm not sure. I think maybe let's just say all the issues around the entities, we just submit in the form of a report so that we have the proper information. On the issues of the Concord ruling with regards to encryption, I think the department, our summary is that the Concord says that the minister has the authority, should she deem it appropriate, to change the current setup and then encrypt the set-top boxes. But when we looked at it, we said, what then does it have as an impact in terms of the current project? And we've been assured that should such a process take effect, it would not mean replacing the set-top boxes. It would mean a new software over the air to the current existing set-top boxes to implement encryption. Now, that is a ministerial prerogative. At some point, if the minister decides to do so. As I was saying before, the issue of the deadline is what preoccupies us, because as a country, we have missed the deadline. So we are trying to push as much as possible that we do a lot of work, even if we don't switch off in 2018, but that we push as much as we can. So the issue of reviewing the policy would, if the minister decides, to have to be a parallel process at a certain point to do that. But she has made her views known even to the department. But it's just to say which one now comes first. Do we pursue that and not implement the rollout, or do we focus on the rollout because we know that the policy process can run parallel, and should it be that a decision is reached by cabinet to change policy, we can just do that, and it's not going to be very expensive to do in any case. So that is where we are with the encryption situation. On the issue of the set-top boxes, if they are operating, my understanding is that one of the biggest risks with this project is that because there was no funding, the call center was closed. So we don't have a call center that is operational where people can call and say, my set-top box is not working. And that's one of the things that we had asked for as additional funding, to say we need to create a call center because there needs to be maintenance of and fixing of that. So that's one of the things that we are putting out as a part of the project to roll out, to say what other ways can we do to make sure that there is post-installation support to consumers around this, because as the team goes, and we have information as the team goes back to the provinces, that other people say they are not working. It's possible that it's not because it's not working, but it's because they don't know how to operate it. Yet there is nobody who is a phone call away who they can call to explain to them how to operate the set-top box. So that is one of the biggest risks that the project is currently facing. I'm sure that when the team comes to brief fully on the DTT, they will talk to the issues of set-top box versus the IDTVs, because they have the expertise on that, and they have been thinking around that. On the USASA case, I think it's public knowledge now that USASA has filed papers with the High Court requesting the High Court to nullify the previous procurement process because of the findings of the AG report. The minister is one of the respondents in that sense. So it is really USASA approaching the court to nullify the current contract that they have with the 26 service providers, because the matter is in court. I think that's the only information which we can make available at this point. I think, CFO, are there any other issues?
Thanks, DJ. I think, as you have said, sir, Honorable Chair, all the issues that were raised by Honorable Kalako and the Chairperson, we will do a formal report per entity and then we submit it. But the information is readily available because it has been audited by the Auditor General. So the 2 weeks that we have set is sufficient for us to compile the report and submit to the Honorable Members. We will do that.
I think we've covered all the questions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Are we not done, Members? GCIS and the DOC, thank you very much for this information. But also thank you for the undertaking that you will respond to us as soon as possible. We are now adjourning the meeting. There is a young lady who was sitting there. Yeah, she will lead you to where you are going to have your lunch. And then and then members will go where they were yesterday for lunch. So I think we're done, and thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.